In the movie, Rocky says it's not about how hard you hit, it's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
That was Sean Rose. This is Marnie Salop.
Thanks for tuning into my podcast, Marnie on the Move. Each week, I will be inviting interesting, innovative movers and shakers to join me on the show and share their story. You will discover and hear from thought leaders, experts, influencers, and entrepreneurs from the worlds of wellness, sports, beauty, fitness, fashion, and more. Marnie on the Move will feature an eclectic mix of people I know, work with, and think are generally doing cool things. On each episode, I sync up with my guests about life, career, and training, and showcase their expertise and story.
On today's episode, I sync up with New York City nightlife impresario and entrepreneur, Gold Bar and Sweetwater owner, Sean Rose. Sean is embarking upon his first amateur boxing match and journey getting in the best shape of his life for a cause that is close to his heart. Over the past few months, he has raised over $45,000 for Haymakers for Hope and the Lustgarten Foundation, both dedicated to raising awareness for cancer research and education. Sean and I talk about what inspired and motivated him to begin boxing and sign up for his first amateur fight, the challenges he has overcome in the process, the many benefits of training at Gotham Gym with coach Luis Ortiz for his upcoming match, and his determination and passion for finding a cure for cancer. We also talk about his longtime career in nightlife, from promoter to owner, the current landscape of the industry, a few entrepreneurial lessons he has learned along the way, his passion for music, and the examples he is setting for his two amazing and talented daughters, Emma and Zoe. I hope you enjoy the episode, and you can still make a donation at haymakersforhope.org. Please head over to our website, marnieonthemove.com, and sign up for our newsletter to learn about upcoming events, deals, and giveaways. Leave us a 5-star review on your listening platform if you like what you hear. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Marnie on the Move. You can also sync up with today's guest at Mr. Sean Rose or Gold Bar New York on social. And if you're looking for a great spot to book an event, head over to goldbarnewyork.com. And before we get started, a word from today's fueling partner, Fit Plus Love. Today's episode is fueled by partner company for which I am the co-founder, full disclosure, Fit Plus Love. Fit Plus Love is a digital and real-time fitness and wellness lifestyle and entertainment company fueling consumers with sports, fitness, and wellness content through events and digital media, from our signature Marnie on the Move podcast, our online articles at Momentum, and upcoming festivals, summits, and pop-ups. It is our mission to bring you everything awesome and next level from the worlds of sports, fitness, and wellness. Head over to our website at fitpluslove.com, sign up for our newsletter, and stay dialed in. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Congrats on all of your amazing and terrific fundraising and your ability to really get in shape these past few months. Tell me a little bit about Haymakers for Hope and your upcoming boxing match.
I'm participating in Haymakers for Hope. It's a organization that basically there is a boxing match for charity. This year, there are 16 fights, 32 participants. They also host events in Boston and in Colorado. The event takes place November 15th at the Hammerstein Ballroom, and basically I'm going to be in there fighting against someone else to raise money for cancer research. So basically leading into the fight, you have 4 months of training, which is also coupled with 4 months of fundraising. We've done pretty good so far with the fundraising.
How much have you raised so far?
Right now, we're just a hair under $45,000, and I think that we should get up significantly more. Hopefully.
That's amazing. And it's you?
As a group, we're almost at 800,000. So
that's unbelievable. And you've done that all in the last 10 months.
No, that's actually been only in the last 3 months.
Wow.
It's a tremendous cause. And one of the things that really attracted me to it is that when you're raising the money, there's really kind of two methods to raising money. There's ticket sales / table sales, basically night of fundraising. And then there's also straight donation. So grandma wants to say, here's $50 for fighting, whatever it might be. With that straight donation side, you can also pair with another charity that some way, shape or form connected to cancer research or any type of cancer-based charity. And the donations can go there. So basically you could split Haymakers does a lot of their fundraising goes to Memorial Sloan Kettering. So I am also raising money for the Lustgarten Foundation for pancreatic cancer research. And fortunately, thus far, most of the money we've raised has kind of been split. So half will go to Haymakers, half will go to Lustgarten.
Why did you pick this organization?
So it's kind of a little bit of a long story, but basically I had decided to try to get into Haymakers sometime around January, February. Joe Servacio, who's the director of operations for Gold Bar, had participated last year, and I just thought it was a great cause. I figured I'm 40 years old, this is going to be my last chance to do something like this, so I applied. It's not necessarily the easiest thing to get accepted for. I believe that part of the process is they want to know that people could really help raise funds. In addition, you have to be capable of fighting. They don't want anyone getting hurt. So I had applied for Haymakers, and really it was just I had applied saying, hey, you know what? I'd really like to fight. I knew it would kind of force me to commit myself to doing it.
Because that's how you roll, right? You don't just sign up for the gym, hire a trainer. You sign up for an amateur boxing match and decide to raise thousands of dollars for charity, which is impressive, by the way.
I figured it was a way to kind of lock me in. And if I got accepted, I would say, hey, I got to fight. I applied for it and I had hoped that I would get accepted. I actually, believe it or not, I was actually at your other sister Jody's house with Chuck when I had found out that I got accepted. So I was super psyched about that. Unfortunately, probably about the same time that I got accepted, I had found out that a good friend of mine, Roland Schneider, had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. Rocky, as I call him. You know, I'd been a friend for many, many years and very close friend of mine. When I found out about that and it kind of linked up with the same timing as far as the acceptance to knowing that I was going to participate in Haymakers, I had gone to see Rocky and I spoke with him and his wife and I said, this is something I'm doing and I would like to fight in your honor if that's okay with you. And I know that, you know, some people have sensitivities. They don't really want to put it out there or whatever.
Right.
Rocky's kind of been the complete opposite. His path has been to say to the world, hey, this is what I'm going through. He's been doing some video feeds of his progress out to his public. They're really very moved that I wanted to do it. And they said, hey, let's go do it. It's been great because on top of being able to really feel like I'm supporting a friend, Rocky's really gotten behind it and helped with fundraising. We teamed up with the Lustgarten Foundation and we've really done a really good job, and there's another wave of money coming in that I know of. So we're pretty excited about being able to raise that. I'm super excited to know that Rocky's going to be there.
He's going to come to the fight on November 15th.
Yeah, he will. He'll be there ringside.
That's awesome. This is a major big deal for you. I mean, you have not, I've known you half my life now, I want to say, like 20 years. I have never seen you work out. So in your spare time, when you're not at your super popular night spot, Gold Bar, or in early days out promoting, managing, or operating other New York City hotspots, you typically would be with your family, with your daughters, maybe playing bass, practicing with your band, or often with your friends watching a game. I mean, exercise has never really been a big priority for you.
I don't think it was anything that I was really thinking about. The only time I think that since we've known each other that I ever worked out at all was leading up to the wedding. And ironically, I'm actually lighter now than I was when Blair and I got married. It was not a thought at all. Going back, I would say early 2017, things had gotten really crazy. Work had become very stressful. There was a lot of stuff going on. And the hours had never really been anything that really bothered me. I just kind of became used to what the hours were. You know, and just for anyone listening, my schedule is a little crazy because it's not just that I'm working late at night, but having two children on a Friday night, I could be out until 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, but be up at 8 o'clock in the morning to go and go apple picking or whatever it might be. When I first bought Gold Bar, the guys used to joke because at the end of a night, the door people and managers send a report on what happened that night for business. And very often they'll go out and grab something to eat after a shift or something like that. So they'd be sending their recap at the end of the night or morning, and I'd be responding back to them because I'd be waking up when they'd be going back home to go to sleep. The schedule never really bothered me that much. But the stress started piling up. And it was really, for the first time in my life, taking its toll. I'm a pretty mild-tempered, mellow guy, and I never really let things get to me so much. But there was just some stuff going on business-wise, personally, that was just really weighing on me. You know, unfortunately, my father passed away when I was very young of a heart attack. So my wife gets very concerned about that and the effects that that might have on me. Blair just kind of said to me, you have to do something. I don't really care what it is, but do something. And she had started taking some group classes at Gotham Gym, which was a couple blocks away from the house. And she was like, why don't you just go there? I had to be kind of pushed into it a little bit. But I said, okay, why not? I've actually always loved boxing. I've watched a lot of boxing throughout my life. It's something that I always really wanted to do and learn how to do. Tim Cooper, who's one of my partners at Sweetwater Social and who is the beverage director at Gold Bar, he's a super well-regarded mixologist and a good friend, had started boxing. And he said it was something he always wanted to do, and you're never too old to kind of learn a new trick. So I'd seen what Tim was doing, and Blair was kind of encouraging me. So I said, you know what, why not? So I just went in and got like a general membership and would go in there and do some exercising and like hit the heavy bag. And I was doing everything wrong, but hitting some shit definitely helps you get some stress out. So I was definitely feeling a lot less stressed by being able to go in there. It's actually really therapeutic. You go in there, you look at a heavy bag and you imagine whomever is pissing you off that day's face and you just pound away on it. And I didn't really have any objective. It wasn't like any specific, oh, I want to lose X amount of pounds, or I want to get in shape, or I want to go this many days. It was really just like, can I stop being stressed? I mean, the stress had manifested in different ways. It was to the point where like I was grinding my teeth at night. I couldn't feel my face. I literally for like a year couldn't feel my face because I was so stressed grinding my teeth. So some of that stuff started going away. And I didn't really think about taking it any further. You know, Gotham is kind of a really unique gym in the sense that it's a boxing gym, but it's also in the West Village. So you kind of have like the health club aspect to it. And, you know, you go in there and on any given day, there's XYZ celebrity or XYZ model or whatever it is. But then you also have some people who really want a hardcore box. But they do a lot of group classes, and that was totally not my bag. Like going in there and being in a ring with like 12 people and just doing stuff was so not my thing. So I just figured I'll go by myself and do my thing. Fast forward a couple months, and some friends of ours, we were having brunch with them, and the wife in that group was getting on the husband saying, you got to do something also. So Blair was like, oh, I'll set you up, come to my gym and whatever. So she set him up and he went for one training session and he said, yeah, it was pretty good, whatever. The second session he went to, I had seen him right after it. And he said to me, I can't ever go back to that gym again. And I was like, what happened? And he's like, I don't know. My guy was sick and they paired me up with this guy, Luis. And he's like, I haven't been able to move for a week. So I left and I said to Blair, I think that I'm going to start doing some training sessions one-on-one with a trainer. And she was like, okay, great. So I went into the gym and I spoke with the owner who had already known us from going there. And I said, look, I want to do some sessions. I said, but I'm not looking to pay to have some guy watch me run or do whatever. Like, right. I want to learn how to box. And I said, and I want this guy, Luis, because I figured if he basically made my friend completely immobile for a week, like that was the guy for me.
Right. Like you need that kind of intense workout and training.
The thing that I'll tell you that's super interesting, you know, when you take a journey like this, is that your coach, your trainer becomes a really important figure in your life and in your process, right? And I think that it's really important that you find someone who can not only teach you the skills that you need to have, but who can really get to understand you. And the scary thing is that Luis and I have been working together now for about 10 months, 9 months, whatever it might be. And in a lot of ways, he knows me as well as anyone knows me. It starts coming where someone like that needs to, they know when they have to push. They know when they have to give you a hug, so to speak, right. You know? There couldn't have been a more perfect person for them to set me up with. And it's really been amazing, an amazing journey. And it's also really awesome that you feel like it's not just someone that I've paid to train me. Like
right,
he's
invested.
Emotionally invested yeah. in this and my success. I believe, I mean, he would probably never say it. I think he takes great pride in at least the fact that I've really gotten so into shape.
I think that any trainer that is a real trainer that's invested in it in what they do and their craft is going to be beyond proud. To work with someone like you who can go from never really boxing to fighting in the ring and even beyond that. I mean, that's why they do it. They want to see the people they work with succeed. And it's such an amazing relationship to have with a coach and a trainer. So I'm sure he's super proud of you. So what's the training like?
I think for me, as opposed to some of the other guys from the gym that are participating, one of the big factors was that I was just remarkably out of shape. We had to spend a lot of time getting me physically into shape. First and foremost was weight loss. I would say that when I first stepped into the gym, I was about 260 pounds. Right now, I'm 215 pounds.
Oh my gosh, wow. So for every pound you lost, you raised 1,000. But yes.
One of the things that's really interesting about boxing, and one of the reasons I really liked it, a lot of people try a lot of different exercise or training regimens. And for me, one of the things that's always really been the toughest is it's the mental aspect of it. To me, I can't think of anything more painful than running, right? Running a marathon. I have massive amounts of respect for people that do that. But when you talk to them and they talk about how they kind of can zone out, and it's just not me. My brain does not allow me to do that. After 10 minutes of running, I'm like, please let this end. It's not even a physical thing as much as a mental thing. When I started boxing, what's really interesting is that there's always something to change, always something to work on.
Right.
So you're never exclusively focused on just one thing. It doesn't really allow you to ever get bored with it. Plus, there's also the added incentive that someone's going to punch you in the face if you space out. So, it kind of really affects that aspect of it also. But, you know, when we first started going in, I think that a lot of it was just conditioning. I don't think that until you've ever actually been in a ring and tried sparring or just moving around for 3 minutes that you realize how unbelievably taxing it is on the body. It's completely different from any other exercise or workout that I've ever done, any other sport that I've ever played. And I've seen some people that you would think are in tremendous shape get in there and try to move around for 3 minutes and realize, wow, that's not so easy. So the conditioning part was really a huge element in the beginning. So it was dropping the weight, being able to sustain to get in there and be in there for 3 minutes. You know, in the beginning, it was really just a lot of mitt work, but I think that was really just more pushing it to less to learn punches, less to learn the specific combinations, and more to just move. And then followed by some weight work, followed by some running, always ending up with abs, a lot of jumping rope. In the beginning, a lot of jumping rope.
And that's harder than running.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely hard, especially if you've never really done it. It takes a while to get a rhythm and to get used to it. I don't remember it offhand, but Luis had given me a routine to do when I was going in by myself that I remember posting it to Instagram and being like, should I have an ambulance waiting before I do this? And when I was starting, I would jump rope for 10, 15 minutes straight. That'll help get you in shape pretty quickly. The beginning of it was really a lot of conditioning stuff. And then as we progressed, we turned up more of the boxing technique and learning punches. And then eventually we went into sparring, which is just a whole different world.
I can't even imagine. Like, I know, you know, I've taken boxing before and I've never, ever gotten in the ring with someone, but I can't even imagine if somebody hit me, I would take them out. Like, there would be like no bell ringing in the background. Like, I would be complete. I don't know how you have that. I mean, I do understand that this is a sport and it's not about that. And I've talked to a lot of boxers in my career and have friends who are boxers, but at the same time, like, just me personally, I don't know if I could have that much control to step out of the zone.
You know, I'm doing this at 40. Right. I think that the way I would feel and the way I would react would have been very different if I started in my mid-20s.
Right.
Being frank, I was a lot angrier and had a lot more aggression then. As I've kind of progressed in this, you know, I realize that I'm a little bit more laid back of a guy at this point in life. I'm probably a little bit more of a defensive fighter and try to sit back a little bit more than offensive fighter. But you also learn very quickly that throwing hard punches and missing is more tiring than actually landing punches, and going all out and just getting pissed off because someone punched you in the face is going to burn you out quickly. Haymakers does a great job of filming all of their fights and all of the productions that they have. I look back over the last couple of years of fights, and there's one thing that kind of definitely rings true, which is that whoever gets tired second normally wins. You have to remember, people are going out. They've had 4 months to train. Most people don't have a lot of experience in the ring that are participating. And on top of that, you're going out for your first fight in front of 2,000 people under the lights and music and everything at Hammerstein Ballroom. It's not like, you know,
that's
so it's not like you're in some
element small
gym, or you're in your gym moving around the ring. You know, you're going out. So the adrenaline rush is crazy. So people tend to come out really hot and heavy and get gassed really quickly. In a lot of ways, my age has been a benefit because I'm a little bit more patient. On the downside, I don't really have that same anger and aggression that I probably would have younger. I think that that was definitely a better thing for me when I was first starting. Now I probably could use a little bit more aggression. It takes a long time to get comfortable in the ring. There are just very few people that hop in there and have like an instant comfort. It takes a while. You got to get used to getting hit. You got to get used to moving. You got to get used to trying not to get hit. So there's a lot of different things that kind of come along with it that make it super challenging, but also super rewarding.
Speaking of challenging and rewarding, you're also a successful entrepreneur. Where did that begin for you?
We bought Gold Bar 6 years ago. I promoted for many years. That led to kind of overseeing or helping oversee operations for different places, essentially as a consultant. And then at a certain point, about 7 years ago, I just said, you know, I'd like to really do something for myself. So started going out and looking for a space. I wasn't looking for a nightclub, and I certainly wasn't looking for an existing nightclub. I really wanted to open something more like an employees only, like a cocktail bar. And that was the types of space that we were looking at. My broker at the time had said, hey, Gold Bar is available and the price is great and the deal is great. So I was like, all right, I'll look at it during the day, which is always a big difference in hospitality. And the place had really still been in pretty good shape physically. So I checked it out a couple nights and I still felt that there was a lot there as far as its value to the city. And, you know, we put in a bid and we were able to get the space. So we had it. A year later, we opened Sweetwater Social. You know, I've had a bunch of things come and go in between, but those two have been really the mainstays for the last 5 and 6 years.
This has all been organic. Like, you never sat down and said, I want to be...
I think that life's a lot more enjoyable by just kind of letting life happen. No, I didn't plan this at all. I mean, I literally had gone away to school for a semester my freshman year of college, and I had come back for myriad personal reasons. And I bumped into some guy randomly on the street in Manhattan that I knew from summer camp. I said to him, what are you doing? He said, I'm promoting nightclubs. I was like, all right, if you ever need any help, let me know. I had never been in a nightclub. I was really just looking to meet people. I figured, you know, I was, I think, 19 years old at the time. And I said, if I can meet some girls and meet some new people to hang out. I did. You know, I said, if I could meet some girls and meet some people to hang out with, great. Then when I got into it, I was like, wow, if I can do this and pay for my nights out, that's great. And then it led to being able to actually make a living out of it. But it was never anything by design at all. I realistically thought that it was something that I would do for a period of time just to have some extra money in my pocket until I figured out what I wanted to be when I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought that it would be what I did for my life. And you just kind of every year grow and grow and grow. And you look back and it's 20 years later and you're like, wow, I guess
this
is what I'm doing.
You married my sister and you have two awesome kids. How did you meet my sister? I just want to include this because it's like one of my favorite stories.
I was hosting an event for the MTV VMAs. This was 2000. I had let a bunch of friends know that I was doing this. And, you know, it was like a invite only. You needed a pass to get into event. And I called a buddy of mine and told him to come, and he had called me back and said, I'm going to come with a couple of girls. I was like, no problem. So I had to go and meet them on the corner to give them the passes. The event was at a place called Float, which was up in the 50s. I met them out on the corner. It was my buddy and Blair and her friend Melanie. I came out to meet them and I said to my buddy, who's the lamb? Very famous family statement talking about Blair. We hit it off. He had told me, he said, tell her you're in a rock band. So that was kind of the icebreaker. And we hit it off that night and we had an on and off again year. And then we've been together ever since.
Thanks for sharing. I do love that story. Now, have you enjoyed working in the nightlife industry and being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I mean, it's the only thing I really know. I started at 18, 19 years old or somewhere about that. Honestly, it was never something that I really ever thought that I would wind up doing as a career. And it's certainly not very aligned with my natural personality, but you just fall into something and I guess you get good at it or good enough at it that you can afford to, you know, live the lifestyle that you want to. It's a very interesting thing. There's some tremendous sides of it, which is the freedom and the perks that you have with it, the people that you get to meet, the things you get to do. The one thing that I'm realizing as I have a child that grows older and can understand this is that I've lived a very fortunate lifestyle in the sense that I've gotten to do a lot of things that most people don't. And I've gotten to meet a lot of people that most people don't. And that's an amazing part of it. At the same time, it's a very, very difficult and grinding business. I don't care who it is, the most successful guys in the world. It's a 24/7 business. And that a lot of people don't realize that there are very, very few places out there where the owners or the people closest to the business are not really the guiding forces of. And what I mean by that is that if someone calls you or texts you at 1 o'clock in the morning, that's a big client or, you know, a relevant connection, that they're going to Gold Bar. Whether you're home on the couch or you're at the club, you got to be there for them. Very often, if you're not, that person will opt to go someplace else. The businesses are still really intrinsically tied to us as partners or the people who are the faces of the venue. There really isn't a tremendous amount in hospitality where that's not the case. I think that when you maybe step into the restaurant world a little bit more, or you know, a specific type of bar, that can change. But really in a nightclub and to a certain extent bars, you as an owner are really, you have to be there. You have to be seen. You have to be seen for your staff and you have to be seen for your clients. That adds an extra level to the intensity of it all because you're on call 24/7. I can't tell you how many guys or people I know or times in my life that, you know, you've had to leave an important function or a family event or this, you know, whatever it might be, because you have to go and tend to a client or tend to someone important. I kind of realized to a certain extent how things were spiraling for me in the sense of my connection to work.
That is why people will go to Gold Bar or come to any bar or nightclub that you have run over the years, because they know when you are there that they're going to have an amazing experience. And so not every owner is like that. I feel like the landscape has totally changed. I mean, when I used to go out years ago to nightclubs, I mean, that would be the only places I would go would be places where I could text the owner, get on the guest list and have a table within 15 minutes of getting there with a VIP client. And I don't know that that still exists anymore, except for maybe a couple places, yours being one of them.
All of these things fall into hospitality, right? And the root of the word, right, is about being hospitable. The one place that I do think that personality-wise I fit in the business is that hospitable nature. It is very important to me that people come out and get the experience that they're looking for, that people feel like they're being taken care of. When I first started in nightlife, it's corporatized over the years, but it was not very corporate and people would come in and come to a space and maybe they would feel like they were getting lied to. Someone would be like, yeah, sure, have your birthday party here. And then like nobody would get in and someone's night would be ruined. So I made a decision very early that I would never mislead people, that I would never misguide people. I never wanted to be that guy. So I think that from that perspective, you know, I've gained the trust of those who I work with, that things will always be done the right way and on the up and up. What I mean by like personality doesn't exactly align is I'm not the most outwardly social person. I'm definitely not the coolest guy on the planet. And
you're a bass player.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, that's a perfect example though. Like, you know, I mean, God knows
You're understated cool.
I can't stand most of the music that gets played in most of these places. I mean, that alone is painful enough for me.
Are you still playing?
Unfortunately, not for a couple years.
Not at all.
For a long time, we had kind of tried to keep things going with the band and then life just happened. You know, there were four of us at the core, always our drummer situation was like Spinal Tap. There were four of us at the core. And then, you know, you start getting married and having kids. And at a certain point, your wives look at you and say, you're never going to be a rock star. So like, can't be going to the studio three times a week or whatever it might be. So things kind of started going different directions for everybody and we just really didn't have the time to play. And then for me personally, I never thought that I was going to be some famous rock star. So it coming to an end was something that I was okay with. But I always missed the camaraderie of hanging out with the guys. So we would always try to get together a couple times a month, just the four of us to go and do stuff. But unfortunately, a couple of years ago, Sean, our singer, passed away. And at that point, any hope of a reunion tour was unfortunately out the window. But I do miss it because obviously I always love playing, but it's also the camaraderie of hanging out with the guys and creating something that was super important.
Do you feel like your time boxing and training has taken the place of playing music and practicing with your band?
It kind of ties into why I've kind of really taken to the boxing. You get into the gym and then you start meeting guys and you spend a lot of time talking about the craft. And the same way as a musician, you kind of look at music or listen to music in a different way.
Yeah.
I think that when you're actually taking up the sport of boxing and participating in it, you watch fights a different way, you talk about it a different way. It's very interesting when you really get ingrained with a gym and some guys, you realize that like people really get into this.
They're very passionate about it.
Very, very passionate, and they really eat, breathe, and sleep it. So that's kind of made up for it. The group of guys that are participating from the gym and also a wonderful girl, or they're great people, and we've really like all hit it off and gotten to know each other and enjoy each other's company. You know, every Wednesday night we go in and we spar just the people that are participating in Haymakers, and we've gotten to know each other and we've gotten to hang out a couple times, and it's really nice to get to know this group of people. And there are also some really involved people in the gym that like to either spar on some of the other days or always looking to get together, and that's where I like it. That's what I like the most about it.
I feel like that community of people that will share a similar interest and be equally passionate about something, whether it's music or sports or whatever your hobby is great, even if you don't want to be a rock star or you're not competing for the Olympics or a gold medal. It's nice to have even smaller goals, just to have an outlet of creativity and just a physical outlet to have fun and have some downtime by yourself with your friends.
Well, I think the interesting thing about Haymakers is that you're not just having a fight. People have also done it for a real cause.
And that's so even better. Yeah.
It's even better, but it also makes it so much more intense, right? Because most people are fighting for someone, whether it be a family member or a friend or whatever it might be. There's an extra level of intensity. And at the same time, that fighting for the cause also makes it a lot less hostile.
Right.
And I'm not talking about in the ring, but with Haymakers, it's a 4-month program. And then at the 2-month mark, you spar the person that you're probably going to fight on fight night. They do make some changes based on how the sparring goes, but for the most part, you're probably sparring the person that you're fighting with. Then there's a whole media day that they put together some media reels and pictures and whatnot that you could use for your fundraising and promotions. Going into that day, I was really curious to see how it was going to go, because you have a handful of gyms that a lot of people are participating from.
Oh, so it's not just Gotham?
No. So every year there's different gyms, okay. But this year you have Mendez and Church Street and Everybody Fights. So you have people from all different gyms.
That's
and
fun.
You walk in the morning. It's really early on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning, and everybody's kind of clicked out in their gym. Then the sparring takes place. But then over the course of the day, you start seeing the guys that are going to be fighting each other kind of talking and getting to know each other, and the other fighters talking and getting to know each other. And you realize that although there's that mutual respect and understanding that you're going to be fighting each other, everybody's still ultimately there for the same cause. And it was really nice to see everybody interact. And you realize that everybody that's really participating is there from coming from a good place.
Right.
It was a really, really nice experience. And I'm sure that fight night is going to be pretty similar. We're all on a Slack thread because every week we have to go in and give our weights and the organization will send us updates through it. And, you know, it's nice. There's a lot of good banter that goes on and it's overall like a really friendly vibe. That's why for anybody that would ever ask, I would encourage anybody.
I was going to say, how long has Haymakers been doing this?
I think this is their 8th year.
Would you do it again next year?
I don't believe they let you do it another time. I would strongly recommend that anybody do it. I think it's a great cause. I think it's a great program. And I think it's a great way to do something socially responsible while also improving your situation.
So what's your goal weight?
We're going to fight at 215. So I'm pretty much there. So now I'm actually kind of in the inverse. I'm trying not to lose more weight.
Has your diet significantly changed as you've been going through this training?
My diet has significantly changed, and the biggest factor has really actually been, for me, especially considering my profession, has been alcohol. I have not completely abstained from drinking, but I've really cut down my drinking a tremendous amount. Whereas, not to say this in a bragging way, but where in a night I could drink a bottle of tequila, like now if I have like...
I could totally drink a bottle of tequila back in the day.
Well, you're always a vodka girl.
I did like vodka.
That's been a major factor. And the one thing that you kind of learn as you start training and getting into shape and losing weight is you start seeing where the pitfalls are. And for me, my biggest vice was the late night drinking into late night eating,
right?
Which is never healthy. Like, I don't
probably
care who you are.
Late night eating was worse than the late night drinking.
Well, I mean, if you're drinking a bottle of tequila, you already had your day's worth of calories just on the tequila minimum, yeah. Right? Whatever you're drinking. But then grabbing pizza, I remember a couple of years ago, I was out with my buddy and like, we had pizza to start off the night and then we went back for pizza at 3 a.m. and that was really where the vice was for me. Along the way, you realize that there's some really super interesting things. When you first start training and if you're doing it the right way and with the right person, you kind of can take off a pretty decent amount of weight quickly, but then you kind of plateau and right. You sit there for a little bit, but then you start taking off more weight. What kind of happened for me is I kind of went in like three stages. It was kind of like 15 pounds, 15 pounds, 15 pounds. And that's kind of like the way it went. But now I feel like between changes in eating and, you know, I've really gotten rid of, I don't really eat any junk food, very rarely eat, you know, something like pizza or something like that. For a long time, I cut out a lot of carbs. I've realized how important that is and necessary to have. Really, since the weight started coming off, for a little while, I was feeling a little weak. So I kind of stepped back up my carb intake. You really need a lot of protein because if not, you're going to be sore all the time.
How many hours of training are you doing a week?
I'm normally in about 5 days a week and the session... If I'm doing a one-on-one, it's normally like an hour, but it's in an intense hour.
Yeah.
If I go in by myself, I normally are in there for about an hour and a half. What's really the most draining is the sparring. For whatever reason, even if you don't really get hit that much that day, you just really get very sore. Plus, you know, our Wednesday night session, we do it later in the night and you kind of get the adrenaline rushing. So I almost always sleep bad on a Wednesday night because I'm sore and the adrenaline's kind of going. But back to the diet, I think that, you know, it takes a little while to kind of figure out what's going to work for you.
Right. Everyone's so different.
And people's initial thought is, all right, I'm just going to eat like salad and, right. You know, like that's that.
That's what people think I eat.
That's not ever going to be effective. And your energy level is really important because if you're putting in the time, forget about whatever the cost is. If you're putting right. In the time to do these training sessions and to go in there and train, you want them to be productive. And if you don't have energy, you're not going to be particularly right. Productive and you're not going to get better. So you need to really balance it out. For me, the diet in the beginning was the easiest thing, and now it's become the hardest because I'm trying to find that balance of how to maintain my weight, not lose really anything more, but while keeping the energy levels up.
Yeah, I totally get it. Essentially, I've been eating like this for the past 7 years. My diet is very plant-focused with lots of great carbs, protein, and micronutrients that give me energy for training and racing and help me recover. It's so important. I can't even emphasize this enough.
It is. And it's not just about what you eat. It's also the timing of what, you know, when you eat, how close to a workout, how close to after the workout. You know, I've definitely learned the importance of kind of refueling right after the, you know, within the hour,
30 minutes
to an hour of the workout is really important. It's really been tough for me is generally a lot of the sessions I do are in the morning.
Right.
And between getting the kids ready for school and doing whatever you have to do, I don't really have a tremendous amount of time to eat in the morning. So sometimes I go in really not having eaten enough and not having that energy. I was introduced to the idea of honey, which has really been an amazing find. Joe, who had participated last year, said to me, you need to get into honey. Like, grab a spoonful of honey, especially if it's raw, unfiltered.
It's protein.
But also the release of the sugars is more spread out than you know,
sugar.
You know, you kind of feel that energy consistent throughout the workout as opposed to just like that quick hit and then the crash. So that was definitely a really good find for me. I've recently realized how important it is to eat before and fuel before. So you really kind of want to eat before and eat after. The before is very tricky when you're new because you also don't want to eat too close to when you're working out because then it's going to kind of like make you not feel so great when you're working out. So it's a really, really tough balance.
It's very tricky. I mean, especially because I do triathlons and they usually start at 6 a.m. And so we have to get up. You have to eat 2 hours before. And so we have to get up to eat. So I'm up at, you know, 3 a.m. eating oatmeal because it has to digest before you get in the water and swim. But you need enough calories to get in the water and swim for an hour or 30 minutes fast or whatever it is. And it's, I found that oatmeal has been amazing. You know, I like steel cut gluten-free oatmeal and it takes a while to cook. So then I have to make it the night before. It's not easy. And honey I use for fueling during races. So there's this amazing brand and the CEO was on the podcast of Wetherspoon Honey, which is raw Manuka honey from New Zealand. It's really awesome. I use it on the bike because when you're training, like you have to constantly be eating and working out at the same time.
It's just the, it's always the timing.
Yeah, no, I know, because you need like at least an hour and a half. I don't know what you do in your workouts. I could eat a sandwich while on my bike and not feel it. But like if I'm jumping up and down, if I were jumping rope or going for a run, like I'm totally screwed if I don't eat an hour before it, anything sooner and it's going to be like in my stomach.
The biggest problem is normally at least like 3 days a week, I'm sparring. You get hit in the stomach after eating your turkey sandwich. Yeah. It's not going to end up all that well. You know, I mean, as far as like the sessions, I really look at it three different zones, right? There's the sessions that I'm in there with Luis and I kind of leave it to him to whatever we're going to do. Then there's the sparring, which is sometimes either with Luis or with some other guys from Haymakers or guys in the gym. Then the last is when I'm in there by myself. When I'm in there by myself, I almost start off always with a run on the treadmill. One of the trainers had suggested to me that because amateur fighting is 2 minute rounds, every 2 minutes, I increase the speed. So, you know, I start off at one speed and then every 2 minutes, I'm increasing the speed because the idea is that you want to be able to find that extra kick as you go further and further into the fight. So an amateur fight is 2 3-minute rounds with a minute break. So I really started doing that and I've slowly been increasing the speed on that. I normally do it for like 10 or 12 minutes. You know, for me, much longer of runs. Again, like I said, I just kind of lose focus. You know, and then depending on the day, I'll decide what I would do. Initially, we would always do boxing first and then any strength and conditioning stuff second. But as I've started to see the weight loss and my conditioning's changed, we've kind of pivoted to conditioning in another way, which is that the first aspect is you want to get in condition where you can actually last and move around for the full round.
Right.
The second level is you actually want to be able to have the strength, muscle memory, endurance to actually throw punches and take punches for those rounds. So one of the things that we've started doing now is we'll do strength and conditioning before boxing, because that'll get your arms nice and tired so that when you're then throwing your punches on the tail end of that, you kind of have to muster that extra kick. And that's actually, I think, a lot tougher than anything else because you just get so tired and sore. As I've lost the weight, one of the things we focus on a lot is leg conditioning because so much of your power comes from your legs. The one thing you notice when you take off weight has a lot to do with the heaviness of your punch. When you're carrying an extra 30, 40 pounds, means you have a little added kick behind that punch from the weight. And with that taking off, you have to compensate somehow. So, you know, we focus a lot on leg strength and leg conditioning and also really snapping your punch. You know, speed can equal power.
Are you lifting weights too? Doing a lot of strength training or not as much?
We're doing a lot of strength training, but it's definitely not, it's not like typical like muscle man, you know, strength training. Luis always says like your biceps are for your defense. You know, you're keeping your hands up. Your triceps are for your offense and then your punch. So, you know, we do a lot of stuff that affects that. Everything's kind of in groups. The one thing that we never do is really just like one exercise. It's not like, okay, let's just go sit down and do a bench press. It's more dynamic, packaged exercises.
How do you feel?
I feel good. I will say that, you know, obviously I have a lot more energy after the weight loss. On a good day, I feel terrific. At the same time, I am 40 years old and doing some pretty intense stuff for 6 days a week. So I am remarkably sore and you slowly feel things falling apart brick by brick. You have soreness in your hands and your shoulders and whatever it might be. But other than that, I really feel pretty good. I think that once the fight's over and I'm not training as intensely, I'm going to feel amazing.
Are you going to keep boxing?
Yeah, for sure. I don't know that I'll be as intense, and I don't know that I'll spar as much as I've been sparring.
Do they have a program like that at your gym where you could get involved and do that on a regular basis?
On Saturday afternoons, a bunch of guys spar. And then also, anytime there's not a class in the ring, you can kind of like just grab one of the guys and say, hey, let's go and move around. You can really do it at your own leisure. I definitely learned the hard way that having a bigger nose is not... is not a benefit in the boxing ring. That's something that I'm going to have to protect against moving forward. But I have all intentions of continuing. It's something that I really enjoy doing. I like, it makes me feel great. Right now, I'm looking to maintain my weight because of the fight, but I think that we'll definitely maybe hope to lose a couple more pounds after the fight.
Would you ever get into beyond this, like amateur boxing?
I mean, I think that I would have done it if I was a little younger.
Right.
I think that at this age, it's a little taxing. And look, a lot of the training has also corresponded with my slower season at work. As work picks up and, you know...
You get into the holidays, right? This is your big season coming up.
The busiest portion of the year is from September to December, September to the end of the year. And then you start having a lot more family responsibilities and things like that. I think it'd be hard to kind of maintain at that level. Again, if I was younger, I think that I would probably more... intensely think about, I'm happy with what I've done and what I will do with the fight. And who knows? We'll see what happens.
But are there any big like takeaways that you've gained, like lessons, big learnings from boxing that you think can help you with your career moving forward, or that you've been able to kind of implement along the way with work?
I think that boxing's like life, right? So something that you learn pretty quickly is that there's always going to be someone better than you. You're going to walk in there and you're going to spar and there's going to be someone better than you. And that's kind of the way it is in anything, in life, in business, whatever. But I think that because there's going to be someone better than you and because there's going to be someone who's hitting you, you are forced to continuously try to find different ways to improve and different ways to compete. And I think that that's kind of the same thing in business. I wish I had the same confidence level when I walk into a ring, the same way that I do when I walk into a room on a business level. But I think that that's something that comes with time and
right.
with practice. If you're into boxing and you watch some of the movies and you watch some of the fighters and you hear some of the things that are very common in boxing, you know, like very famous quotes like Mike Tyson's, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
Right.
Like to me, that's a statement that applies not only to boxing, but to life. Like,
right.
you know, you go into every day or every business transaction or whatever it is and you say, you know, I have this plan, I have that plan, I have that plan. But it's not until something goes wrong that you're really able to realize what you're made of. Another quote that I love is, I think it's actually from Rocky Balboa, and it's not the best of the Rocky movies, but it's a great quote. You know, he says, nothing's gonna hit as hard as life, but in the movie, Rocky says, it's not about how hard you hit, it's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. And specifically for me at the time of my life, when I really started taking this up, that was a really relevant factor. Thinking back even to the orientation we had for Haymakers, they bring in some alumni. And, you know, I've experienced this over the last couple months, which is that there are some times that this sport and just the training in general is going to humble you. And you have questions about your ability. You have questions about whether you could do this, whether you can move forward and all that. And the same thing happens in business. But if there was one thing that I could pass along to my kids, it's kind of that putting your head down and keep moving forward. You know, I'll actually bring something up for you, but I remember your grandfather who lived to over 100. I remember on his 100th birthday, I said to him, Grandpa, how'd you do it? How'd you make it? And he said, my whole life, I've always moved forward. And that's something that I actually tell a lot of people and I talk about all the time, because I think that in life, the most important thing is you have to keep moving forward. People really drown themselves.
Agreed. You have to keep moving forward. That's my MO too.
Allowing your past to dictate the future is a really, really bad thing.
Yes.
The one thing you learn, this is a great example that boxing can teach you, is you know, you can watch a fight and a guy can get hit hard in the first round and look like he's going to go down, and then he winds up winning the fight. Nothing's determined in the beginning. It's only really determined at the end. I think that that's really the most important. And where this all kind of circles for me and ties back is really my buddy Rocky, because this is a guy who was at a birthday party with his daughter at like a bounce house and felt a strain in his side. I believe that's what the story was. And he kept having this stomach pain and thought that it was just like a strain. And after a lot of tests to find out it was pancreatic cancer, and for it to be such a severe cancer with not always the best outcome to be expected, he could have really went into a cocoon and just kind of given up. Right. And he's done the complete opposite. I try to talk to him at least once a week, if not a couple times a week. And I can tell you that over these months, I've never heard, the only time I ever heard him even being mildly negative was, you know, he had to go in for a procedure and the nurse gave him some wrong information about the diet. So he had to push the procedure back because, you know, he had eaten when he shouldn't have, or whatever it might be. And he was just a little agitated that like he kind of wasted time. There's never been, in any conversation I've had, a why me. There's never been even like a sliver of like, I'm not going to beat this. It's always been I'm going to put my head down and keep fighting this. And I'm going to also additionally help any way I can to continue for other people to fight this, right. Raise money to do whatever, to educate people. The guy's continuously worked throughout this whole process through chemotherapy. He has been so inspiring to me because of just the way he's approached this. And for me to see that has been amazing because I don't know how I would be if that was me. And I'm just so proud of him for having moved forward. And again, it goes back to that Rocky quote, right? Part of the humor for me has been that I've approached boxing that I fell in love with because of the Rocky movies. And, you know, my boy is Rocky. But it's that how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. And I think that that's really so important in life.
Where can people still donate for your upcoming boxing match with Haymakers for Hope?
Yeah, so you can go to the Haymakers for Hope website, and then you look at the New York Hope section of the site, and I'm actually the first one up there. So you could just click on it and make a donation. And honestly, for me, even if you can't find me, just make a donation to the charity. Fortunately, it's been an unbelievably successful year. It was the fastest that the tickets sold out.
Yeah, the tickets are sold out for the fight, right?
Tickets are sold out. There are a couple sponsorship tables left, but even those sold at like a record pace. So, you know, all the fellow Haymakers have really done a great job, you know, getting the word out and getting it moving quick.
And this is great if somebody wants to sign up and try to...
Yeah, I would really highly recommend it for anybody. The great thing about it is you really don't need to have any or a lot of boxing experience. If you went in and applied and got picked to participate, Haymakers will set you up with a gym. They'll set you up with trainers. They'll get you started. They know the right people to connect you to. I think it's a really rewarding process on so many levels. Obviously, very excited for fight night.
Do you have a strategy besides stay
don't
alive?
Lose.
Yeah, exactly.
It was actually funny. Blair and I were talking the other day. She had said, you know, are you going to do anything after the fight? And I said, yeah, you know, I've already told the fighters from Gotham that we're going to be at Gold Bar and please come. And I know a couple other fighters are going to come. And Emma chimes in and goes, what if you lose?
Emma.
So, Emma. So Blair said, your father won't lose. He has too much pride to lose.
It's not an option.
I've put in a lot of hard work and I hope that at the end of the day, I win, and I hope I retire from my amateur career with a 1-0 record. It is a sanctioned amateur fight. I think that the winning has already been done. We've raised a tremendous amount of money. We've raised a tremendous awareness. And, you know, I've really made a drastic lifestyle change that hopefully will...
You can sustain it.
It's important for my life. It's not just the weight loss. It's, you know, improvement in blood pressure and cholesterol and all the things that come along with that. But also it's having more energy to participate and do things with my kids. It's, you know, feeling better about yourself. You can ask her, but I'm sure that your sister is more excited about me being a little leaner and less round. I think that all those things come into play. So to me, the second I step in that ring, although I really want to win, the most important thing to me is that I got to that point, that I committed and I did it.
It's a huge accomplishment. Thanks again for tuning in to Marnie on the Move. Head over to our website, MarnieOnTheMove.com, and subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Android, and more. Also, sign up for our newsletter. Just scroll down to the bottom of the site, to the bottom of the website, and hit sign up, because we are gearing up for some really big, exciting announcements, deals, and giveaways. Thanks again for tuning in.